Hello, and welcome to the Knitting Pretty podcast. This is episode 41, and it is May 7th, 2015. Hi, my name's Em. You can find me on the internet as Knit Fast, Die Cozy. I am that on Ravelry and Instagram and Pinterest and Twitter, and relatively active here and there. Especially Ravelry, though. You can find show notes for the podcast, as well as my blog and knitting patterns at emmanitz.net, and you can find a Facebook page at facebook.com/emmanitz. There's a Ravelry group, which you should absolutely join, and you can find that if you just search Knitting Pretty Podcast under the Groups tab. So, hi, welcome. Thank you both to new and returning listeners. I'm really glad that you were able to stop in and hang out with me for a while. I wanted to say a special thanks to those of you who have left some iTunes reviews. I, again, can't see the US iTunes reviews. If somebody else has figured out how to look at other countries' iTunes reviews, you could totally tell me how to do that, because I don't know. For some reason, it's just not working out for me. But the Canadian reviews, thank you guys. It was really, really kind reviews, and they really made my day. And also, I wanted to say, there is an intro thread in the Ravelry group. So if you've joined the group, or if you're thinking of joining the group, come say hi, okay? Because I'd love to meet you, and I'm sure that everybody else would too. So come say hi in the intro thread, let us know a little bit about yourself. Or don't, I mean, you don't have to. I certainly don't do that in all the groups I join, so maybe it would be an unfair double standard to demand it of you. Anyway, enough of that. One more thing by way of administration, just an event coming up. The 100 Mile Fleece and Fiber Fair is coming up on Sunday, May 31st from 9:30 to 3 o'clock at the Bradley Center in Coombs, BC. So if you live on the island, or on Vancouver Island, that is, the island, the only island in the world, clearly, if you live on the island or any of the surrounding islands or the mainland and you feel like a trip, the 100 Mile Fleece and Fiber is a really fun little show. It's like, it's not a big show. It's not like a lot of the big American shows that I've heard other podcasters talk about with like Stitches and no, none of that. It's a smaller sort of farmier show. The whole thing is that the 100 Mile, it's like the local food movement, but they're doing it with fiber. Anyway, I really enjoy it. Every year I've managed to spend way more money than I should. And that's probably the mark of a good festival, or poor willpower, or both. And I do think both are at play in this case. Anyway, I'll be there. It's loads of fun. And Coombs is a really interesting town, so if you happen to be in the area and you have not been to Coombs recently, you should absolutely come down, because you can go to the fiber fair, and then there's Coombs Market, and the goats on the roof of Coombs Market, which should be going up soon. And if that sounds like a crazy thing to those of you who aren't from here, fair enough, that does kind of sound insane. But there, this market, it's not a farmer's market, it's more of like a import market. Like, they import foods and other things from all over the world, so they have really good selections of foods you may have had in other countries, like preserved, you know, canned and jarred and dry foods, obviously not fresh. But anyway, it's great. And they've also got a really good selection of like local cheeses and meats, and it's cool. But the market is in this big wooden building, and on the roof of the big wooden building, it's all sod, and goats live up there. They don't live up there in the off season. In the winter, they don't put the goats on the roof, but the goats live up there in the summer, and it's pretty fun, actually, to you know, go shopping and also admire the goats admiring you from above. So Coombs Market, super fun. I found a really good sushi place in Parksville, which is right near Coombs. So if you happen to be going up to Coombs and you need food, Deco Sushi in Parksville is really good. It's tiny. There's only two tables, but it's really good. Yeah, so enough about that. Just expect me to maybe make a purchase at the end of the month. Let's move on to the podcast, shall we? In my past, most of my completed work was sewing for the past 2 weeks. I made 6 Savannah camisoles from the Seamwork magazine, the Colette Patterns digital magazine. And Savannah is a bias cut tank top that it's designed to be done cut on the bias in a woven fabric, but you can do it in a knit as well. You just don't have to cut it on the bias, which saves you a bunch of fabric. And then it has a lace trim, optional lace trim, and adjustable spaghetti straps, and it's nice. It's got a dipped hem in the front and back, so it is a little longer, which is quite flattering in a camisole, I think. And so yeah, I made 6. I made 4 knit versions, 2 in a sort of warm, slightly greenish tinged charcoal gray, and one with lace along the top and one without, and one in a blush pink, and then one in a striped dark charcoal gray and fuchsia purple. And the ones in knit, I've really enjoyed wearing them so far. They've been great. I did make this stupid mistake of putting 2 of them, the gray ones, my favorite ones, in the wash and then the dryer. They shouldn't have gone in the dryer. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why I put them in the dryer. I had no intention of putting them in the dryer. But they did shrink up a little bit, so I have got them wet again since and have been hoping that with a little bit of creative stretching and hanging them to dry that I can get them back to the length that I like. Because the reason I really wanted these tanks is because I have been trying to create kind of that capsule wardrobe I was talking about a while ago, and I needed just a bunch of basic layering pieces. And I designed the whole wardrobe to go around a longer top silhouette, and now that they're short, they don't work so well for me. So hopefully I can get those 2 longer again. The other 2 I made, which are by far my favorite, are the woven ones. So if you're going to make this pattern and you are torn between whether to do it in a knit or in a woven cut on the bias, go ahead and do it in the woven. Cutting it on the bias is not that hard. It really isn't. It's just a little fiddly trying to get the true bias, and then once you have, it's easy. It teaches you how to do French seams and how to finish with the lace at the top. It gives you instructions for how to hem it properly. It's totally easy. It's really, truly, totally easy. And the ones I did were they're both synthetic, you know, I can't afford silk, but one's in a sort of halfway between navy and cobalt blue background with bright, bright, big floral print, peonies, and other sort of large flowers, dahlias, that kind of stuff, in kind of a modern splashy floral print. It looks really great. It fits in really well with the sort of big statement modern spring florals trend that's going right now, and it was a lot of fun to sew with. And I was smart for once and remembered to center the print motif, which is about as big as my entire chest, in the center of the shirt rather than have it sticking off the side. Normally I forget about centering prints, so that was good of me. I was pleased with that. And yeah, so I did that one with a pink lace top edge. And then I found another sort of slightly more sheer but not chiffon level sheer crepe in a very pale pistachio green with teeny tiny little cream polka dots with even teenier tinier little black polka dots around them, so little like circles of dots. And it's really understated and simple, and I just used a simple cream lace for the top, and both of them are just amazing. They're like totally, totally versatile, totally wearable, really, really flattering. And I'm not a smooth textured person. I'm pretty lumpy, you know, regardless of weight, I'm just, you know, curvy. And I was worried that they would cling to my curves in ways that were unflattering, I guess, but just that they would draw attention to things that I didn't want to draw attention to. But instead, they fit amazingly. They just skim right over everything. They don't cling. You know, if a shirt clings, it clings to your belly and shows, like, the top of your jeans. They don't do that. They just whoosh straight on down. They're super cute, and I'm in love with them. I would say if you have a very large bust, that the pattern might not be, like, you might have to adjust the bust size in the pattern, but because it's cut on the bias, it has a little give, you can probably just make an adjustment in the side seam. But I will say for me, and I have a very small bust, that I had to adjust them inwards quite a bit. And so if you are a B or A cup, you might have to adjust inwards. But yeah, make one. You can find a sort of slinky woven fabric for quite cheap. Make one as a muslin and then go from there. But I really do strongly recommend the pattern. Super versatile. I'll be using it over and over. I know that this is going to be a go-to pattern for me, particularly in the wovens. I don't know if I'll bother with the knits again too many times, but the wovens, definitely. The next thing I finished was some spinning. I finished my Edgewood Garden Studio Wensleydale. The color is, what is it? Exotic Treasures or something or other. Her colorways are individually named. They're not repeatable, so the name doesn't actually matter beyond just the fun of having the name. So it's a hot pink and bright violet purple and cobalt blue with some greens and some other things, like yellows, things that happen when all the colors mix up. But the cool thing about it is it was on Wensleydale wool, which is a long wool, and so as I was spinning it, which I just spun it into a fingering weight singles yarn, which was fairly low twist to keep it soft, as I was spinning it, the lengths of dye on the top, it's not roving, it's comb top, the lengths of dye were shorter than the staple length of the wool, which caused it to muddy just a little bit, which really toned down the color, which was great because it was kind of ridiculous. And now it's still really bright, but it's not so, like, eye-searing. It's got some parts that were yellow and blue and purple all blended together, so it's got some neutral sections, which are really great. And I'm very glad of that because otherwise I had no idea what I was going to do with it. So I ended up getting 336 meters, which I forgot to check the yards on that. More than 336, less than 400, I believe. Anyway, 336 meters of fingering weight singles. I fold them lightly in the sink. When I went to give the yarn its bath, it was very energized coming off the wheel, even though I had tried to spin it fairly low twist. I filled up my sink with very hot water and a little bit of wool wash soap, and then just let the yarn soak into it while I did some chores. And then after it was fully soaked, but the water was still hot, that's something that if you don't spin, you might not have noticed. Long wool soaks up water faster than fine wools. It just doesn't trap in air as much. So you could put a skein of merino on top of water and it'll just float there. Until you push it down, it's just going to float. But Wensleydale will sink right in. So it didn't take that long to get thoroughly wet. And then I just grabbed the skein and sort of splooshed it up and down a bunch of times in the hot water, making sure that I didn't overfelt it, because that is the trick, is when you're fulling something, you want to agitate it enough that the yarn binds to within the individual strand that the fibers bind together, but not so much that the individual strands bind together. And so that's the trick. And I think I did achieve it this time. It did get fuzzier. It's got a nice halo on it now. But it looks gorgeous. It's not quite as shiny as it was before, like I said, because it got fuzzier. But it looks great, and it feels so soft. It's actually surprisingly soft. Wensleydale is not super soft. It does have a fairly dense, or the fibers are quite big. But, yeah, anyway, it turned out quite soft, so I'm happy with that. What else did I finish? Oh, something that's entirely not fiber art related, but I wanted to tell you about because I'm so proud of it. I got out my wood burning pen, my pyrography tool that my husband got for me for Christmas. And in case you are interested in what kind it is, it's Creative Wood Burner, like value pen or something. It was not that expensive on Amazon, less than $20, I think. And it's so far been great. It has an off switch, which is nice. A couple different tips to work with. So if you're interested in trying pyrography, I would say that this value pen is actually a good value, rather than when sometimes something calls itself value and you know that just means cheap and terrible. So I got that out, and I got out a cutting board that I bought at IKEA over Christmas when I was visiting my husband's family, and it was a $6 cutting board or something. But it was a nice beech wood cutting board, and I wanted to put pictures on each side to indicate which side was for vegetables and which side was for meat. Because a wood cutting board can be quite sanitary, A, if you clean it properly, but B, if you just make sure that you keep your meats and your vegetables separate. I mean, that's extra important on a wood cutting board, really. And so, on the vegetable side, I wanted to put a picture of vegetable and something meaty on the meat side. So I started looking up designs online. I looked up botanical illustrations of vegetables, and I found a black and white drawing of a carrot with its, you know, kind of roots on still. I mean, I know that the carrot is the root, but, you know, the other little roots, you know what I'm talking about, and all its leaves. And then for the meat side, I found a picture of a trout. Because I thought about a cow, and I'm like, cows are really big and complicated. That sounds like too much work. And then I thought about a chicken. I was like, no, chickens are even more complicated. And then I thought a fish. And then as I was looking at pictures of fish, I was like, damn, most fish are kind of ugly. So I went with a trout, because a trout is the prettiest fish, I think. I don't know, do you have opinions on which is the prettiest fish? I think a rainbow trout is just about as pretty as they get. So, well, I mean, other than ornamental fish that you keep in a tank, you know, a betta fish is prettier than a trout. I will give you that. But you can't eat them, so really, what's the point? Total tangent. Whatever. Anyway, so I printed them out, and then I dug some carbon transfer paper out of my art closet. And what I had that before for was transferring patterns onto fabric, and for transferring also embroidery patterns onto fabric. And I just laid that down underneath my image on top of the cutting board and traced over the image just to give myself a rough outline. And then I used the images for detail reference. So I only really traced the outlines, and then all the details I just filled in on my own. And it was surprisingly easy. It was fun. I did test the pen out first on a couple of wooden spoons that I had just to kind of get a feel for it. And if you want to try pyrography, I do recommend testing on something that's not like your special project first, just to get an idea of how fast to move the pen to get the amount of burn you want, and what it's like to use the pen. I found it very awkward because it's got a cord, it plugs into the wall to heat the pen up to burn the wood. It's heavy on the back end of the pen, so it's awkward. And that was a little tricky, but after that, it was quite easy. Figuring out how to start and end your lines is also a little tricky. But again, not that tricky. It's pretty reasonable. Yeah, so I did that. There are pictures on my Instagram, and I will try and put a picture in the show notes too. They look so good. I'm so proud of myself. Like, I was just unbelievably, annoyingly smug about how great this cutting board looked when it was finished. And then I finished it with, after, you know, the wood burning, I got some beeswax-based salad bowl finishing oil stuff and rubbed that into the wood, did a couple of coats of that, and then buffed it, and it looks fantastic. It looks so good. And the beech wood takes on such a beautiful color. So if you have an IKEA near you and you're thinking of a wood cutting board, go get one of their cheapy, like, I think it's like 16 inches by 12 inches beech cutting boards. so cheap, but once you put a finish on the wood, it's just a gorgeous color. Yeah, it looks amazing. So go check out the pictures. And if you have ever wanted to try pyrography, just totally do it. My only thing I didn't like about it was if the wood burned a little bit too much, and a little puff of smoke went up, because I am left-handed and curl my arm around and hunch over what I'm writing, the smoke went right in my eyes. Which, you know, I could have sang songs about, but instead I just sort of got sniffly. That, my friends, is the end of my completed projects. On to my present. I have been working on my Evenstar. I am into the non-repeating four rows over and over section of chart 3, so that is exciting. However, it's going very slowly, and I really have nothing to report. No matter what I do, the rows are still 560 stitches long. I started a new thing. It's just a thing. It's a knitted thing. It's a tube, currently. I think what I will be making it into is my sort of go-to tube cowl thing that I like to make out of self-striping yarns. Basically, you knit a tube and then graph the ends together so you have a sort of donut shape. The yarn I'm using is a self-striping yarn that I spun myself, and I used fiber from Nunoco, and they're on Etsy, so go check them out because they are so good with color, so good. And they do these little packs of 10 different colors of merino wool that you can blend together as you see fit. And so the colorway I had was Marrakesh, I think. I'm like 98% sure it was called Marrakesh. And it's bright, different fuchsia pinks and a dark blue and a teal blue and a couple of different oranges and some acid green and another aqua sort of green, I think. Anyway, 10 different colors, and they're all very bright, warm, spicy, gorgeous colors. And to spin a self-striping yarn with that, I divided each color into 4 pieces, and then I made a stripe sequence with them that I liked, and then I just basically spun singles of that stripe sequence 4 times over. And then, when I came to the end of that, I Navajo plied them back and just tried to make sure not to have too much overlap right where the colors changed, so that the stripe color change was fairly quick. And some areas I've noticed I was better at that than others. And I ended up with about a light fingering weight yarn and quite a good yardage on it. I just had no idea what to do with it. I tried to design something for it, but nothing, it wasn't really speaking to me, it wasn't really working out the way I wanted to. And while I really enjoy the bidirectional tube, it hardly merits a pattern. My pattern, The Beat Goes On, is in fact a tube cowl like that, but it has a cable detail on it that's different. This, there's no pattern. You just, like, I don't even know how many stitches I'm using. I cast on until it looked like it would go around my 16-inch circular needle, and then I just started knitting. So I'm using a US size 5, I think, needle, and a number of stitches that goes around that. And basically cast on, use a provisional cast on if you like. This time I didn't. I just cast on and I'll sew it up properly. And just knit until you're out of yarn and then graph the ends. That's the pattern. So I'll put up a picture of that sometime soon because it's looking great. I'm about 3/4 of the way through it and it looks awesome. I'm really happy with the self-striping yarn. If you spin and you haven't tried making a self-striping yarn, you should do it. It's really cool. The last thing I've started is another spinning project. I have some fiber from, let's see, I've got a business card here, from Coxsila Acres Alpacas, which is local to me. I got it at another local fiber event. And let's see, they are at www.alpacafarms.ca, And you can also email them, and I'm sure all their information's on that website. And I bought from them 200 grams of alpaca in a natural sort of grayish medium brown. And I don't know if it's just straight alpaca or blended with Tencel or something. They had this fiber also machine spun up as a yarn, and it did have Tencel listed in it, so I'm assuming maybe, but it doesn't feel synthetic-y at all. It feels very alpaca-y, so if it does have some Tencel or bamboo or something, or maybe it was, yeah, I think it was bamboo that was listed. Anyway, whatever. It doesn't have that much. But then in with it as well, it has silk neps or noils or whatever. I never know the difference. Neps, like in tweed. And they are in a sort of pastel-y Easter egg colors of pink and yellow and blue. And so it's these pastel little tweedy bits on top of the natural colored grayish brown alpaca. It's gorgeous. And it's spinning amazingly. Like, it's still kind of farmy. It's got some dirt and some sticks in it. But as far as fiber that I've had from, you know, that's been processed by a smaller processor for a farm, it's the nicest I've ever had as far as how nice to spin it is. It's just luscious. And so I've got 200 grams, and I'm almost through the first 100 grams. And I have no idea what I'm going to make. I am making about a fingering weight yarn, I think. We'll see. Sometimes it's thicker, sometimes it's thinner. I'm not being too anal about it. I'm just kind of letting it do what it wants to, because with the neps in there, it's not going to be perfectly smooth anyway. So, I don't care. But depending on what yardage I get, I think that this yarn is going to have to be a wrap of some sort. Nothing lacy, just something simple and textured that just lets the yarn be gorgeous. It's so pretty. I'm just in love with it. So that's been very fun. And normally I don't even like spinning alpaca either. That's the other weird thing, is it's spinning beautifully and I'm really enjoying the spinning experience, but I don't normally like spinning alpaca. So that's cool. And that is all I'm working on. In my future, a new pattern came out by Martina Bem. It is called Match and Move. And it's a triangular shawl designed to use 2-hole skeins of Volmiza, which is a lot of yardage, but it makes a really big shawl. And rather than being her sort of boomerang-shaped shawl that's so meant like Hitchhiker and everything, it's a chevron, a very wide chevron pattern that goes laterally across a triangular shawl. And you can't see the exact construction of it in the pictures, which makes sense because that would be giving it away. But anyway, it's a super cool shawl. And I have to make it. I really like it. And I had just recently wound up 2 skeins of Rain City Knits Merino, I think it's organic merino fingering weight, in a really light gray and a really neon orange. And I was going to weave them together in a check pattern. And now I'm having second thoughts about that because they'd be a super cool pairing for this huge shawl. I don't know, man. They'd be a super cool checked scarf, too. So I'm going to hold off on warping the loom with those until I've really made sure. But it's a great shawl. It looks very stylish, and it looks big and squishy. Maybe I need to buy Volmiza. No. Don't say that. Never mind. Pretend I didn't say that. The other thing in my future is some sewing. I want to make the Granville shirt by Sewaholic Patterns. The thing I like about Sewaholic Patterns, other than that the patterns are cute and that the company is sort of local to me, being based out of Vancouver, is that they are one of the only indie pattern companies that I have seen, and thus one of the only pattern companies I've seen, that specifically is designed for a pear-shaped body. And as I am that is good for me. The patterns have more ease worked into the bottom half, and particularly for this Granville shirt, which is just a fairly simple button-down shirt pattern, that's really, really great if you know how annoying it is to be larger on the bottom and try to buy a button-down shirt and anything that you can button up the whole way down looks enormous at the bust. Like, you end up with, like, voluminous fabric under your armpits, and so annoying. So I'm thinking of making this shirt for myself at some point. I don't know if it'll be too soon, but at some point, when I feel enthusiastic about that. But if you haven't looked at Sewaholic patterns and you sew and you either have an hourglass or pear-shaped body type, you should check her out, because maybe you'll find something you like that'll save you altering patterns while you make them, or at least reduce the amount of alterations you have to do. On to show and tell. So as I've mentioned before, I've been doing a lot of spring cleaning, and spring cleaning of my office meant going through all of my yarn and fiber and making sure it was, you know, happy and safe, but also de-stashing a little bit of it. So I thought I would talk to you about de-stashing, because it's something that I have been on the benefit side of with other people de-stashing, as well as something that I have tried to do many times and sometimes really failed. So where can you de-stash yarn you don't want anymore? The best and most obvious place is on Ravelry. There is, in your stash, you can move your stash entries around between a couple different sort of forms. It can be either in your stash or all used up, or you can put it in your will trade or sell section. And that is one way to put your stuff up for de-stash. If it's in your will trade or sell, then people can search it. If you have a bunch of followers on some sort of social media, that's one way I've seen some really successful de-stashes, actually, is people will put up whatever skein they're de-stashing on their social media and just say, you know, first person to PM me gets it, and they go from there. That works, obviously, if you have enough followers who are interested in knitting. If it's all, you know, your aunts and uncles and cousins and not a single one of them knits, maybe not going to work for you. But if you have some people following you who are into yarn, you just might be able to find your stuff a new home. People do de-stash occasionally in their Etsy shops or on eBay, and so that's another option. There's also, of course, in person. You can do swaps. My knitting group has arranged yarn swaps a couple times. We tend to do it with our retreat that we hold for ourselves. But if you just encourage everybody to bring yarn they don't want anymore with the price idea in mind, people can either pay for it or trade for it, or, you know, whatever works for you. But doing an in-person yarn swap is super fun. And there are also, people will arrange yarn swaps outside of, you know, friend groups. And if you want to arrange a yarn swap in your area, check for a local Ravelry group, or, you know, see if you can put up an ad at a yarn shop. Obviously, it's kind of not in the yarn shop's best interests to have it, so ask first. But maybe they'd be up for having your ad advertised on, you know, if you have a local guild. See if they have any way of advertising to their members, that kind of stuff. So, where to buy de-stash? So, if you want to buy something, say you're looking for a skein of Fulmisa to make that Martina Bem shawl, because you need two colors, and say you only have one. Say it's that really nice green wasabi color, and you absolutely love the skein you have, but you really need something else. Just, you know, not that that's me or anything, but say you need a skein of Fulmisa. So what you can do is go into the yarn tab of Ravelry and search Fulmisa Pure. And then you can go by colorway and look at that. And you can see that either down at the bottom part of the yarn page, there'll be popular colorways, or you can search through and see the other ones. And there is a little button you can click underneath the colorways that will take you to the yarn in that colorway that has been listed as will trade or sell by the people who have it. And people will have prices listed, you know, how much they want for shipping, all that stuff. You can approach them and arrange it between yourselves. If you would rather do it through something like Etsy, just go on to Etsy and search the name of the yarn you're looking for. You might have some good luck if someone happens to be destashing something. Also, eBay is another great place to try and do that through a storefront. Or just search the name of the yarn. The benefits of buying on Destash are that you might be able to get it for cheaper, not cheap. I really don't think it's likely you'll get it cheap, but you might get it cheaper. Or being able to find something that is discontinued or quite rare. If you want a color that a hand dyer did in one of their clubs, you might be able to get it on Destash. However, some clubs are exclusive and do not allow destashing for a little while, so that might hinder you somewhat. But the other thing is that if a dyer's no longer in business, but their yarn was wonderful, that is the only way you can get a hold of their yarn. So, like cephalopod yarns, I every once in a while look at cephalopod destashes and don't buy things because I don't have all the money in the world, but I consider it. And I suppose if you are looking for a yarn that is a more commercially available yarn, just, you know, it's like any time you're buying used, you're reducing the amount of stuff that's put out into the world, right? And that can be a good thing. So, how to sell your stuff on Destash? First, you have to choose what you're going to Destash. And that's the hardest part. But I really do recommend, unless it's a completely ridiculously daunting task, and even then, maybe more so, maybe you really need to, pull out all of your yarn onto the floor. Even if it takes a whole room, even if it takes just a tiny bit of space, pull out all your yarn and sit in the middle of it and look at each skein. And you know, I've got mine all in plastic bags, so I don't bother like opening them up to feel them or anything, but just have a look at each skein and see how you feel about it. Because last time I did this, which was just a couple days ago, I just realized that there was stuff in my stash that I didn't even know I had. There was stuff that I had really fallen out of love with, and I wouldn't have really noticed it just looking at my bookshelf that has all my yarn on it. Would never have even seen it. But this way I was able to actually get a good look at all of the yarn and organize it on the ground and kind of put it into piles. And the thing is, don't decide to sell something just for the sake of getting rid of stuff, unless you are moving or something, because you might, you know, want it later. But if something just really is no longer to your taste, there's no point in keeping it around. So either, you know, sell it or give it away. But there's just no point in keeping something that you have no intention of ever using. And that's what I found with a lot of my stuff. It was like hand-spun that I didn't want anymore because I didn't like the color at all. Or yarn that I'd been given that just wasn't to my taste. Perfectly good, gorgeous yarn. I don't know why I even had it, you know? Should probably not buy so much stuff. Anyway, so how to actually get it sold? You need to make sure what you're selling is of good quality. Make sure it's not cut or snagged or messed up. Get good photos of it in natural light, ideally on a white or at least neutral background. Take it outside to take pictures, but don't set it in the dirt. Nobody wants to buy a skein on Destash that's been set in the dirt. But good quality photos are important. It's just like selling a product that you've made on Etsy or, you know, any kind of online shopping. Good photos make all the difference, and it's much easier to get accurate color representation if you take it outside, not in full sunlight, but in sort of light shade. And then you also need to think about how you're going to be shipping it, where you're going to be shipping it to. Are you willing to ship it anywhere in the world? If you're selling it in a more informal way, like Ravelry, you can, you know, if someone approaches you about the yarn, you can then calculate the shipping based on where they are, if that's what you want to do. But if you're selling it on Etsy or something, you need to come up with a shipping number beforehand. So think about how much shipping's going to cost to various places and act accordingly. A lot of people who are destashing within the US will do a price that includes shipping because you guys have a postal system that works really well for that. In Canada, shipping's quite expensive, so that's generally an additional $8 to $15, unfortunately. But anyway, you just have to think about it beforehand. How to buy stuff on DStash. You are going to want to have a PayPal account, and you don't have to use, you know, a PayPal balance if you haven't used PayPal before, which most people have, but not everybody. You could use, hook your PayPal up with your Visa or your bank account and use that. PayPal, if it's just, you're just sending money between friends, I don't think PayPal even charges you for that. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I spent a bunch of time playing with PayPal, so. Anyway, you're going to want a PayPal account or some other way of transferring money online. I would strongly urge you to have as good a look as you can at the photos of the yarn. Beware yarn that has damaged look about it. People will have probably photographed the best possible parts of the yarn, and if it already looks damaged or pilled or rough around the edges, then the whole thing's going to be kind of rough. You can ask the seller where it was stored. I strongly suggest you ask them if it was stored with mothballs. And if they say no, okay. But I had a friend who purchased some yarn on DStash that the seller swore it was never anywhere near mothballs. And when it came to her, it absolutely reeked of mothballs. It was disgusting. And because at the time I was dying and had the facilities to do so, she asked me if I could try washing the smell out, and it took so long. It was disgusting. It took something like 7 washes. I used wool wash, I used Dawn dish soap, I used vinegar, so many different things to try and get that smell out, and then I had to hang the yarn out wet outside in the breeze. And then once it dried, bring it back in, soak it, wash it again, hang it out to dry. And I was able to get the smell down to a tolerable level. But really, 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 unless you like mothballs, unless you plan to be using mothballs, don't buy yarn that's been stored with them. Yeah, I mean, every time you make an online transaction, particularly with a private vendor who's not going through something like Etsy or eBay, you're taking a risk. We all know that. We're all adults here. But it does bear repeating, because just because somebody's on Ravelry and they're a nice-seeming person because they knit and all knitters are nice people, doesn't mean that the transaction's going to be perfect. So if you're uncomfortable with buying on DStash online, just don't. Don't. Arrange a swap. And arranging a swap is really, really not that difficult, and it's a lot of fun, and, you know, it's a great way to meet other local knitters. So, if you are hesitant to buy DStash online, swap. So that is my wisdom on DStash. That's another thing. So I have this friend who very kindly every once in a while will DStash just by giving stuff away. And if you have yarn that you don't want to go through the effort of selling and you don't want to send it to the thrift store, you know, if you have a knitting group, just bring it. People will be happy. You'd be surprised. Some stuff that you might think you're just not into anymore, somebody else will love. Or it'll be perfect for that baby gift that they have to make for a shower or whatever. So there is something to be said for giving stuff away too. And it feels great to just get stuff out of your house. So if your stash is overwhelming, giving away is another option. But that's very personal, obviously. Some people are comfortable with giving stuff away, some people aren't. And that's totally cool. Whatever works for you. So in the spirit of all of this de-stashing, this sometimes I've bought yarn, sometimes I've been given yarn, I thought I would give away a skein of yarn from my DStash pile. And this skein, and sorry if the packaging crinkles, it's stored in plastic. That's something else you should ask about. If people have stored their stuff in plastic bags, there's much much smaller chance of it getting moths. It is a skein of sock yarn by Sleeping Dragon Yarns, and it's their hand-painted 100% superwash merino wool fingering weight, 450 yards, in the Maple Leaves colorway. So I'm going to give this away to one of you awesome listener-type people. I'll open a thread in the Ravelry group, and I don't know. What should the prompt be? The Knit Girls have done a cool thing where they just ask you to report a random act of kindness you did, and I don't care what. Giving something to somebody. Tell me about that. Tell me about something giving that you or somebody around you has done. If you're not comfortable performing a random act of kindness and then telling people about it, if you're one of the modest types, that's totally okay. Talk about, tell me about a nice sometime that someone did something randomly and kind for you. And yeah, I will have entries open not until next time I record, but 2 weeks after that. So basically a month from now. And then I will draw for the yarn. And I'll put a picture, and yeah, it's gorgeous. The colorway is a variegated blend of really warm saffron yellows and oranges and slightly purpley dark reds. It's just a beautiful two-ply merino fingering weight yarn. It would make a gorgeous shawl. And the colors just aren't singing to me anymore, despite the fact that I absolutely adored this when I bought it. So one of you guys can have it. There was one other thing I wanted to say about D-stashes. A word to the wise. Oh, if you buy something on D-stash, just to be safe, it would be wise of you to put it in the freezer when it arrives, just for a couple days, and then bring it out of the freezer and put it back in for another couple days, just in case, you know. Nobody is going to intentionally send you moths, but they might have a problem that they didn't know about. And so just in case, do all the protocol you would for moths. So put it in the freezer, let it get frozen for a couple days, and then take it out again and let it warm up, and then put it in the freezer again. And that should kill any moths or little buggy creatures on it. But really, realistically, most people would not send you a mothy skein. That would be terrible. But it has happened to people, and it's just not worth it. And also, people look for moths, but they could have carpet beetles or bed bugs or something. So just be careful, and it's not that bad of a problem to have to just stick something in the freezer for a couple days. Okay, so enough about de-stashing. On to my weekly obsessions. The first is I want to sew underpants. How exciting for you to know about that. But I do. And I have looked at a couple different patterns. One's the Florence, or is it the Geneva? Whatever. One, the seamwork pattern for underwear. There was a bra and underpants in one issue. And so one is that pattern. There's another Jaylee pattern that I will link in the show notes that is for a couple different varieties of women's underwear. But I wanted to know, do any of you have experience with sewing underpants? Are there any materials that you think work well? Not well? Any elastics you recommend or don't recommend? How do you feel about the whole thing? So, because I have a lot of fabric left over from making various knit projects, whether it's the tank tops or t-shirts or dresses or whatever. I have a lot of knit fabrics. I need new underwear. I thought, why not try it? It's not that hard. It can't be that hard. So I'm gonna. But yeah, if you have any advice, I would love to hear it. My second obsession is I have been reading Eats, Shoots, and Leaves by Lynn Truss. It is a rather humorous book about punctuation. It's far more entertaining than a book about punctuation would be, you would think. And I really recommend it. It's a lot of fun. Currently I'm learning about the comma still. I'm most of the way through the book and I'm still on the first punctuation mark, but it is funny and it's also informative, and I realized one thing I was doing wrong, so thank goodness for that. It is also just, you know, you get to enjoy your book and read some nonfiction that's really entertaining while also getting the side eye from your significant other, because why on earth would you be reading a book about punctuation, right? My third obsession is today, my husband and I took my daughter for her kindergarten orientation day at her school, which she'll be starting in September. And it was adorable and weird and kind of awesome. Like, I don't know, I just can't believe my kid's going to real kindergarten school in September. I can't believe it. And it was really cute to see all the kids milling around and seeing all the people that could potentially be her new friends next year, and the kids from her daycare that were there, that I'm glad that she'll be able to continue her friendship with them, so that was fun. The school gave us a little kit of, like, early reading books to help get everybody kind of on the same page. They don't expect your kid to be able to read or anything, but just encouraging parents to read to their children and to play games, to teach them to take turns and eat healthy foods, you know, all that stuff that they just want the kids to be able to do by the time they go to kindergarten. Talk about their feelings. That was one. They were like, the kid needs to know how to say how they feel, because if they don't, it makes it really difficult for the teachers. And I was thinking, like, I know a bunch of adults who could really handle learning how to say how they're feeling. So let's hope the kids figure it out. But anyway, yeah, my kid's going to kindergarten. It's starting to sink in that she's not a tiny baby any longer, and that's a little weird for me. But weird in a good way. And I also was thinking about how, you know, my husband and I were both going to go there, and I thought, maybe that's overkill. We really don't need both parents at this hour-long kindergarten orientation thing. And then I thought, you know, we only intend to have one kid. And every chance we have to do something like kindergarten orientation or whatever, that's the only chance we're ever going to have. You know, that's the only kid we have. That's the only time we're ever going to have to be involved in our kids' lives in that way. And so maybe she'll feel like we're really dorky for both of us coming out to every little thing she does. But, you know, if you don't do it, then you've missed it. So I'm enjoying trying to... I mean, it sounds silly, because I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm obviously actively involved in my child's life. But I've really been trying lately to be more actively involved in her life in a way, not like a hovery helicopter parent. That's not it. But actively involved in making sure things happen for her, that she gets to have experiences that I want her to have before she's too old to have them, that kind of stuff. And she does get a little bit eye-rolly and like, Mom, you don't have to come with me. And I try and give her space, but it's important. And I don't even know what I'm saying about this. I'm just blathering on by now. My kid went to kindergarten orientation and she's growing up, and that means stuff is changing and complicated, right? That's basically where I'm at. So, on that slightly befuddled note, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you again in 2 weeks where we can talk about more fun things, and I hope to see you on the Ravelry boards as well. So come enter the contest for the Sleeping Dragon hand-painted merino sock yarn, and yeah, I'll see you around. Happy knitting!